svinavadhitamastuma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shiva sai gaura bhakta vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Any bowl of syrup? Yeah. Okay, so now finish the Isha Upanishad, going through it in chronological order. Study must have both chronological study and thematic study. So Prabhupada says, in other words, he refers to this by saying you must read the book and then you must study the book. So it's two different things. Reading means going from the front to the back. Study means then you're connecting all the different relevant points. Because in a conversation, you can't just go right to the main, the highest explanation of the main points, right? You have to take it through stages. And then each time you go, you take the whole thing a little bit deeper. Let's say there's one point and it has two supportive points. So then you're going to introduce the main point and those supportive points, and they're basic. Then you're going to, once you understand that, then you're going to take that a little deeper, and then a little deeper and deeper and deeper. So let's say you go through five stages of depth there. So then that means finally you come to the understanding. So that's what you gain by reading it. Having now read it and come to that final conclusion, that's the state you're at, but you won't have necessarily remembered the other ones, how you got there. So now, thematic study means you go back, and then all those three points on those five levels are put together in one place. So you take the first one, and then all the five levels are then seen. Then the next point, and those, then that, and then how those connect to each other. Does that make sense? So that's the difference in thematic. It's not just that there is a theme, but the point is, why is there a theme? You understand? The theme is in connection with the ultimate, what you're trying to obtain in the work. Does that make sense? So that's why Prabhupada mentioned Tatato Brahma Jigyasa. That is the theme of the Brahma Samhita. So everything will be connected to that, but that'll make so many sub-points how to get there. Having studied the Brahma Sutra then in its chronological order, then going back and then studying how all these things connect to each other. Does that make sense? So that's what we're doing here in the Upanishad. So that, and then we'll start with the introduction here. The thematic study shows how, does that make sense? This is not thematic by the modern educational term of thematic, meaning just, it is in one sense, but it goes much deeper. Because the modern thematic means there's a common thread, yes, but we want to show the mechanics of that thread, how that works, how it connects to other, like you have a thread. But the point is there's right next to it, there's another thread, and going in the opposite direction, there's other threads. That's why you have cloth. Right? So you may study the thread, but do you understand cloth? So that's the point here. So the thematic study shows how the topics discussed in Sri Isha Upanishad fall into the categories of Vastutraya, the five main topics of the Upanishads, and the 10 esoteric truths of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, Dasmula Tattva. Right? So that's why we were studying, in the other class, we're studying these elements so that they're very clear how these work. So technically all there is Vastutraya. But in this, then the Upanishadic version, when you're giving, you're dealing on the basic principles, because they don't necessarily always appreciate Godhead. So you're trying to establish truth. So you're going to establish what is the supreme, what is the material energy, and what is the jiva. Right? That all schools will deal with. They'll all, a minimum, accept those three. Then there's going to be a process for elevating yourself to obtain the Supreme, and there's going to be a goal that you're going to get to. Once having gotten there, what is the position of the living entity? Right? What's his relationship with the Supreme? You know what I'm saying? So every philosophy will have those five. But it still is Vasutraya. So you're dealing with Chit Achit Ishwara, right, or the Supreme Lord. Right? How do you say? The living entity and the material energy. So that's Sambandha. Right? Because that's the Sambandha Gyan. Then you're going to have your process, Abhideya, and your goal, Prayojana. Does that make sense? So that's minimum. Then if what's accepted, you accept like the Gaudiya Vaishnav, so you accept the Chintabheda Veda Tattva, then you can expand those things more. So Prayojana will remain the same as love of God, Abhideya will be the same, it will be bhakti, but your Sambandha can accept, because you can accept broader understandings of Godhead. So then Godhead as the source of everything, right? Godhead as the Lord of Rasa, and how you say that he is, you know, one without a second. He's supreme of all, you know, how you say, manifestations. Right? He's supreme above everything. Then you're going to have the jiva, is that you're going to have the liberated, the nature of the jiva, the liberated soul, and the conditioned soul. Right? Then you're going to have what holds all that together. Krishna's energies is the Chitta Veda Veda Tattva. That's under, with that understanding, then you can approach bhakti. Right? And by bhakti you'll get prayojana. So we see it's still the same. But it's just further expansions of it, more detail. Okay? But if you deal with the five, then that will be like the Upanishadic or Vedantic approach. If you deal with the ten, actually you could say Upanishad, because Vedanta actually deals with nine. Like that. So basically everything is there except they leave out rasa. Like that. Because until you've accepted devotional service, rasa isn't considered part of the equation. That makes sense? Okay. So here, then the five main topics to the Upanishad, since that'll be the main theme, the central theme, but that'll always be shown back as Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, as Vasutraya, and as the Dasamula. Then one, the nature of Brahman, Ishwara, the nature of the soul and its relation to Brahman, Chit, the material energy, its origin and connection to Brahman, Achit. All right, so everything's connected. The soul and its relation to Brahman. The material energy and its origin and relation to Brahman. Right, so it's always going to go back to Brahman or to Ishwara. Then the means of attaining Brahman. You want to attain that, so that's sadhana. The nature of the supreme goal and status of jiva in mukti, the sadhya. So you have, yeah. Yeah. Because the whole idea is that the human being is trying to make progress. Therefore, there's going to be a sadhana, and there's going to be something you're progressing to, sadhya. Okay? And then who's doing that is the jiva, which is the sadhaka. Right? You have the sadhaka who performs sadhana to get to sadhya. Okay? That makes sense? Okay. Then the first three topics delineate Sambandha, the fourth defines Abhideya, and the fifth defines Prayojana. The thematic study shows how Ishopanishad analyzes and resolves these five problems. Right? Because if you can think like this, then you can go into any philosophy, any religion, and analyze it. Because you have this to analyze it by. It's not speculative. This is the difficulty. Much of the time we see, if we use a modern academic approach, is we try to deal with something, but we're using the facts and figures that topic of knowledge gives itself. And its own terminologies, its own definitions. That's important, of course. But if we use that as the framework, how can we compare? How do you compare? So you don't have. So the whole idea is that if we were saying, we'll say we're taking a comparative religion course, is the question ever, okay, we have these religions. We have, you know, Christianity, we have Islam, we have the, you know, the Hindu, and we have the Judaism, okay, we have Confucianism, like that, or even if we're studying with, comparing within, you know, Christians and Protestants and this, is there ever a, is one of the topics in comparative religion is, who is God? What are their different concepts of what is God? It comes up? No. What's the nature of the soul? It doesn't come up. The nature of the material world hardly comes up. All these things will be done in passing and discussing something else. All they'll deal with is that what is their means of obtaining whatever their goal is. They want to get to heaven. They want to get to Brahman. They want to extinguish their existence. You know that. And they'll have some process of sadhana. And then in that, then they'll have some definitions of all these other things like that. But it doesn't actually start with defining God in the relationship of everything else. So there's no sambandha. So because there's no sambandha, then it makes it very difficult to actually identify, well, what is a Christian? What is a Jew? What is this? It is a question these days. What makes you Jewish? There's people who, they're atheists, but they're counted as Jews. Because they'll follow the culture, but they're atheists. You know? So that sounds very strange. But in the Hindu, you can be an atheist, you can be an impersonalist, and still follow the Vedic culture. You're still called a Hindu. You're still a member of the Vedic culture, the Vedic society. It's progressive, just you're only going to Brahman. Right? Well, these others, the atheists, they don't even believe in Brahman. So they don't know what they believe in. What is there? What is the ultimate? Okay, you don't believe in God, so what is there? Where are you going? They don't care. They don't know. Does it make sense? So therefore, you can use these five to assess any philosophical or religious discipline, right? And then make a very nice comparison between them. Then you can say exactly, what do these guys think of God? What do they think? What is the main element of the process? What is their goal? The ritual and all that, that's a detail. That's secondary. Upanishads aren't discussing ritual. Was there any ritual discussed in Ishupanishad? No. But we had the devotee recognizing the Lord and surrendering to the Lord. Giving up things that were unfavorable for that surrender. But there was not one ritual discussed. Why? Because the principle. Then you have the detail. So accordingly, how Ishupanishad will be applied to a brahmachari may be different than to a grihastha. All right? What it is how they're approaching Krishna and what aspect they're understanding Him as the Supreme. It means, of course, Krishna and Braja, but the instruments in which you are seeing Krishna, the environments you're seeing Krishna in, those are different. Does that make sense? The brahmachari has his little locker that he has to connect to Krishna. And the grihastha has a house. Right? Does that make sense? We were discussing it before. These elements, because it's Vedantic philosophy, then you're dealing with the mind in how it's deviated into basically impersonalism and voidism. That's basically, you know, the options. And so then, from that, then gives rise to all varieties of insanity. The first one being just material consciousness, right? Then you make it extreme, right? And then you get insanity. You know what? In other words, you have to be crazy to be here in the first place. But of those here, then they'll say there's, you know, it's just like you're in an insane asylum and the people that, the inmates that can interact with each other and play cards together and stuff, they're considered normal, right? And the ones that are so off that they can't relate to anyone, those so-called normal inmates of the insane asylum will say they're crazy, right? Or you go to a prison, those that can interact or relate to each other and all that, they're considered normal. Those that are completely socially dysfunctional, they'll be considered real, you know, criminals and stuff like that. Does that make sense? But it's within the context of the environment. So within the material world, you got to be crazy to be here. But within that, who is workable crazy will say is normal. Those who are not workable crazy will say are crazy. Does that make sense? So... How do we get into that? We started somewhere.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So then from that, so we basically comes down to this. So we see that this all applies in our life. Right? As we were studying before, we're discussing it today with the kids. That, okay. In you have you always have the Supreme Lord, right? You have his potency, and then you have the jiva, right? So the jiva is always going to be assisting the Lord's potencies. That makes sense? Like that. We don't directly serve, right? We were giving the example of, it worked very nicely, of education. Okay, now this is an educational environment. So going by that Vedantic psychology, then you have, then the element, Krishna is education, or Krishna is knowledge, right? So that is the quality of Krishna. Now, Lakshmi manifests as the environment in which education takes place, right? So it happens to be in this form as this area here, right? Now, if there were too many columns here, it wouldn't serve. But it's done in such a way that you can see. Does that make sense? Like that. If it's a place you can't see the speaker, there is a garden there. You know what I'm saying? It's designed for that. So here in this environment, then that's there. Then we can take part in that educational process. We can assist Lakshmi, the environment of education, serving Krishna as education. Right? By performing our duties as student or teacher. Does that make sense? Then with that, there'll be further sub-assistance. With that, you'll have your literatures or, you know, how you're going to sit, the arrangements for sitting, all these other things. Does that make sense? But you can see it's all connected to education. So if you understand that, okay, the environment is education, therefore, what paraphernalia you would need here? Right? So if there was a bicycle sitting here, we'd say that's not necessary for the education. It doesn't belong here. But someone else says no, but it, you know, if it sits outside, it's in the rain and all that, it gets ruined. Because they're seeing it as, you know, protecting the bicycle. But they don't understand, no, this environment is education, not protecting bicycle. You can protect the bicycle over there in that shed. Right? But because it's their bicycle, they want to make it unique, you know, and special. Therefore, they put it here. You understand? But they've missed the point. No, this is an educational environment, therefore everything here, the environment, the paraphernalia, those that are here, right? So we're here. And so it's education. Now if a bunch of kids come down here, start yelling and screaming and playing ball, it's not part of the... So Krishna's not being served. You understand? That's why it doesn't match. Not for another reason. You know? You could say, you know, oh, don't you understand there's a class going on here, but we've just mentioned the Lakshmi element. No. What's going on here is education. Yes, the class is going on, but that's the ritual. That's the form. What's actually happening is the education. Does that make sense? So in that way, then, Krishna is seen, and then depending upon your environment, then it's manifest. So the environment of serving Krishna for the grihastha is different than the brahmacharis to sannyasis. Does that make sense? It's still Krishna's qualities. But because of a particular nature of the quality that is being brought out, the particular detail of the manifestation of Lakshmi to obtain the quality, therefore the environment changes. That makes sense? Basic principles are still there. Lakshmi is still the same person. So therefore she'll always like things neat and orderly and tidy. You know, it should be efficient because you want a result. If it's not efficient, only if in efficiency are you getting a taste. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is understand what you are worshipping Krishna in. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. The family goes to, watch the stage program. Okay? Now, through the stage program, then the husband is just focused on what's going on the stage. And the wife keeps talking to him, making comments and laughing and things like that. Husband is thinking, what's going on here? We're here to watch the stage program. You know, and say, you know, why are you talking so much? And then the wife gets upset, she gets grumpy. Then she doesn't want to watch the stage program. And then the husband is thinking, but it was your idea to come here in the first place. Right? So what's going on here? Because there's not a common point of, you know, what form of Krishna you're worshiping. Though technically there is a commonality of form. But what quality of Krishna you're worshiping is totally different. And because of that, then, how the environment is used, what is the paraphernalia and attitudes of that are different. Therefore, there's a clash. And each one thinks the other one doesn't know what's going on. Does that make sense? So, in other words, why go as a family? Because that means the family element becomes the prominent aspect. So the family is connected to the Krishna consciousness. So the interaction of the family then becomes the primary assistant to that form of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, if there's some interaction that is in connection with this form of worshipping of Krishna, does that make sense? Then it's not contradictory. The man is thinking, the aspect is, you know, we're seeing Krishna as the play, so the efficiency of watching Krishna is the play. Well, the wife is thinking that the play is therefore something that is used as a basis of interaction of the family. Right? Does that make sense? And so the point is as the higher the energy in the drama or whatever it is you're watching, the higher the opportunity of energy of interaction with the family members. Right? So take note here, is that's why at the most highest energy point, just when they're going to say that one thing that fits everything together, that's when she is going to start talking. So you're trying to take advantage of that situation to resolve the thing and finish it. She's trying to take advantage to interact. Right? So the man is thinking you're ruining, you know, the drama, and she's thinking you're ruining the relationship. You understand? So the whole point is that's why this psychology is presented, right? Now does this make sense why that's the approach? The modern psychology can't actually deal with it at all. They'll deal with just what's around the edges. They get symptoms of Lakshmi and some of the paraphernalia. But actually they don't know what Krishna is, so they don't actually know how to put it together. So each psychologist will have a different idea. Does this make sense? So it's a very simple, straightforward thing. Okay, so that's why then in here is that Ishopanishad is identifying the Supreme Lord, our relationship with Him, and that interacting with Him based on devotion. The manifestation in the form of ritual, that's a particular form of Lakshmi that manifests for that particular, attaining that particular quality. Okay, so there the devotee is offering prayer. Okay, now what form prayer takes? What is the best way? How would one deal with prayer? Would one be standing on one's head? You know, would one be in the toilet? Would one be brushing his teeth? You know, what would be the perfect form of prayer? Right? So that's that form that therefore Lakshmi takes. And then you have the ideal form. And if not, Lakshmi has unlimited expansions. Right? Since the West basically doesn't have much alternatives, therefore they think the Vedic has no alternatives. And because they know more about the West than the Vedic, therefore if there is any alternative in the West, they know it. And they don't have any clue about any alternatives in the Vedic. Therefore, the conclusion is, Vedic is, you know, dogmatic, while modern is broad. But actually, modern is very limited, Vedic is unlimited. But you have to know how it works. And it's working way beyond anybody can conceive of in the modern context. Way beyond. It's so far beyond. It'd be like, you know, talking quantum physics in, you know, the first grade classroom when they're still trying to figure out, you know, the difference between, you know, whether the two goes this way or it goes that way. And then the kids say, what is this guy? What mumbo jumbo is this guy talking about? This is not practical. You know, we're learning math here, and this guy's talking letters. Right? E equals mc squared. There's only one number in there and two letters. So it's like, you know, this guy's really out of it. He, you know, doesn't he know anything about math? Math is numbers. You understand? That's actually what's happening when anybody is making these comments about the Vedic culture does not apply nowadays. That's actually what you're dealing with. Is just a lack of understanding, that's all. Right? They're intelligent enough to be able to discriminate, but they're not informed enough to be able to make an educated discrimination. Right? So that's why then this study is to create that kind of understanding, that kind of intelligence, so that one can actually discriminate. Because if you can discriminate in the Vedic, whatever alternatives are there in the modern already are included in the Vedic. The difference is in the Vedic it's connected to Krishna, in the modern it's not. So when devotees use modern alternatives, you really have to analyze, is it actually connected to Krishna or not? Something may be connected, but most of it, much of the time, is not at all. Maybe 2% connected, 5%, 10% connected. And 90% is actually illusion. So that's why it gets very minimal efficiency. You know what I'm saying? It's like in the modern. How much efficiency in developing the Vaishnav culture and etiquette and Vaishnav interaction is being accomplished by political correctness? Right? Very minimal. It gets certain things done, it has efficiency in certain ways, but it's very, very limited. Why? Because most of it is not a connection to Krishna. Why is it correct? Right? And the main word is political. They will take it, no, it's correctness. No, it's political. It's pranamoy. So how far away is pranamoy from anandamoy? Right? Second from the bottom. So most of it's pranamoy. It's not actually Krishna consciousness. It's artha. You're politically correct. Why? So you'll get a good result. Why get it? That's artha. Now what's a good result for? So we say it's for Krishna. If it gets to Krishna, great. But why would you want that result for Krishna? Is it to do with Krishna or with us? Our needs. You understand? So it's because we're not actually seeing Krishna as the central feature, it's the quality. Therefore, we're not understanding how Lakshmi has manifest to support that quality, to assist in that quality. And therefore, what is our place and position and duty in assisting Lakshmi in serving Krishna? Does that make sense? So this is what's going on in this whole, when you break it down to its nuts and bolts, this is what the Upanishads are doing. Right? That's why I say Vedanta psychology is Vedanta. Vedanta is, it means Upanishads are Vedanta. Right? They're the end of knowledge. You start with the Samhita, and then you have the Brahmanas, then the Aranyakas, then Upanishads. So it is the Anta, or end, of Veda. So the Vedanta is Upanishad. Right? And then the Vedanta Sutra is written to take all the points, all the philosophical points being made in Upanishads is in Vedanta Sutra. Right? All the points being made in the Upanishads is there in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? And then we see is that that's taken a step forward. It's not just the analytical understanding, but practical, how a devotee applies that in their life with what mentality. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. Get anywhere? Right? Okay. As it was already explained, the Gaudiya Siddhanta is based on the teachings of the Upanishads of Vedanta Sutra. Therefore, it is not surprising that all tenets of our philosophy are traced back to the five main topics of the Upanishads. Right? As Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that if you can't base bhakti on the Upanishads and Vedanta, then your point is not valid. And one can say, well, that's, you know, dry and philosophical. Everything, including, you know, rasa between Radha and Krishna, he's quoting Upanishadic sources to establish it. So it can be done. Right? Regarding the first one of these five topics, the nature of Brahman, the central issue is whether Brahman is without characteristics. This is the impersonal concept called Nirvishesh. Or he has characteristics, that is, Savishesh doctrine, maintained by the Vaishnavas. Below is the specific answer to this problem given in the Dasamula Tattva. Okay, so then here we have one, the Vedas are the principal scriptural evidence, which in turn expound the following nine principles. Right? So in other words, evidence has to be there, authority has to be there. If there's not authority, how do you base everything? That's the whole point. So if we're saying this is right, this is wrong, what's the authority? And if all we say, is, oh, everybody knows that, that means we are the authority, not anybody else. Because even the modern person who is talking, be good, be nice, and all that, why is it there? Because it comes from their background in some kind of religion. Right? Religion says, be good, be nice. The modern, it just says, make money, enjoy yourself, right? Make money, spend it, enjoy. Because if you make money, then the market is moving. You spend the money, then it keeps it moving. Right? So the whole point is without movement, there's no result. So since the result is, the point is enjoying your senses, and that's done with paraphernalia. That requires money. Therefore, if the economic market is always moving, right? Therefore, then you can get from it the qualities of enjoyment through your paraphernalia. So consumerism is there. So their worship of Krishna is through the form of enjoyment. Does that make sense? And then in that, then who wants to enjoy more? You have to control more. So then back to controller and enjoyer, right? How we get here in the first place. So from that principle, they're doing a somewhat good job. But the point is if they were really just trying to enjoy, then there's so much more. So they have chosen they're going to enjoy in this way. But there's so many other manifestations of that. So they've picked a particular form. Yes, it does that. You drive something nice, wear something nice, live in a nice place, like that, in a nice area of town, you know, or a nice environment. You know, these are all eternal principles. But now what you consider better or worse, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Okay, you're living in, you know, okay, you're living in some place in the world, and then somebody says, okay, but living in America is better. Okay, so they're in America. But then within America, then you could say living in one of the major, you know, metropolitan centers would be better. Now then there'll be, you know, somebody will favor New York, someone in Los Angeles. Then within that, where you're going to live? You're in Beverly Hills, you're on the, you know, upper West Side. Where are you? You know, and then within that, what are you in? And that, are you overlooking Central Park? You know, do you have, you know, a big, you know, this and that? But then having all that been done there, but then if they have some place, you know, that's on, you know, in some, how you say, island that has a very amazing, you know, how you say, landscape that they can look at, you know, and then ocean and trees and big cliffs, then everyone will consider that's better than this. You know what I'm saying? So it just keeps going. There's always something better. So the whole idea is, what are you establishing these things points on? These are all being established actually on eternal principles. But the modern can't make the connection between those principles and God. They can't actually point out the hierarchy because of lack of knowledge and illusion. Well, the Vedas can. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you have to have an authority to establish that, because ultimately it goes back, Krishna is the authority. If you don't accept scripture, means you don't accept Krishna as authority. You make, he's God, he's, you want to love Krishna and all, but you don't want him to be your authority. Because Krishna is the scriptures. Krishna is the source of the scriptures. You know, Vedanta Vedakrit. You know. So he wrote them. He knows them, he wrote them, he follows them. So we don't accept authority, then you're not going to actually be progressive at all. You know, it'll be a little progressive, a little here and there. You're nice to people, or give money away, or spend some time, or, you know, nice, good. But in the bigger picture, it's not that great. It's better than most anybody else is doing, but it's not as good as you could be doing. Right? Okay, so then second, Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Now you've established him as, he is of all truths, he's the supreme truth. So that means if we're saying in this age of truth and we must speak truth and everything must be truth, but Krishna is the supreme truth. So if your present day truth doesn't support Krishna consciousness, then it's not real truth. It's a truth, but it's a lower truth. You know? It's the higher truth that you're looking at. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. You know, the person has just got up, gave this lecture at this, you know, big conference like that. Everybody's standing and they're applauding and they're all amazed. And then some kid goes, hey, look, his shoe is untied. It's truth. His shoe isn't tied, but does it matter? Now you're going to throw out the guy's lecture and everybody appreciating and his knowledge and study because his shoe's not tied? So that's the thing. You have to, unless you accept authority of the Vedas, you're not going to accept Krishna as the supreme absolute truth. Therefore, he's not going to be the supreme truth. You're going to accept other lower truths as more important. Well, you have to be Krishna conscious. Yeah, but I got to be practical. I got to maintain my family. So who's the highest truth? You know what I'm saying? In the way, ultimate goal, yes, is Krishna, but in what you're doing right now, Krishna is not the supreme. It's something else. So if it's something else, it's illusion. Does that make sense? Maya is very tricky in this way. Because you have to understand, she runs the environment. Krishna is the quality, and that's always Krishna. Right? Then the environment she manifests to obtain that, she's doing it out of her devotion. You see it in that light, then she's manifesting to you as Yoga Maya. You don't see it in that light that is connected to Krishna, then it's Mahamaya. So she runs both. The Sarup Shakti runs both. You see a connection to Krishna, you know, she's there as internal potency. You don't see a connection to Krishna, she manifests it to you as external potency. Then you just see the environment as dead matter. Otherwise, you see it as qualities that are there to serve Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The conch shell on the Arctic plate, do you see it as dead matter? No, you see it as part of the puja paraphernalia. Something very living and dynamic, yes.
Then when we see it in connection with Krishna, it's like on the transcendental platform. And when we're not, then we get reactions according to our conditioned nature because we're taking our conditioned nature into consideration. So therefore, then reactions come.
Yes. There'll be it means to that degree, you're seeing a connection to Krishna. Those areas, there is no reaction because that's okarma. To that degree that you're not seeing Krishna, then depending upon where it's pious or impious, you get a pious or impious result.
So seeing in the external, two situations can seem exactly the same externally, but because the internal mood is different, one is taking closer to Krishna, one is just finding the
Yes, material. Like that. That's why it's not enough to be able to say the environment.
Yeah.
I'm being practical. Okay, practical is the quality, but practical what? Because they're not seeing practical as the quality, you know, so therefore Krishna, they're seeing practical as my endeavor, which is based on an environment. But what's that environment based on? Right? What's it? I'm being practical. Okay, I'm just being practical, Prabhu. Okay? So that means what? I'm being practical, that's my abhideya. But they're not so. But what is Krishna? What's the sambandha there? But their thing is, I'm being practical, getting money to take care of my family. Why didn't take care of the family? Because it's normal. Everybody's got a family. And that's where it ends. You know what I'm saying? So actually, their attachment, their need to be involved in family life is the quality of Krishna that they're serving. But they don't see that. They don't see a connection to Krishna. Therefore, if it is Krishna, is that attachment, how would they serve? How would Nakshmi serving Krishna in that form of that attachment? Therefore, the family and everything would be connected to Krishna. Yeah, so but they're not connecting it because it's their attachment. They're not seeing Krishna, so it's illusion. So when they do chant, when they do take prasad, when they do look at the picture of Krishna on the wall, when they do, you know, wash their hands after taking prasad and wash their mouth, they're doing those out of consideration of Krishna and Krishna. They are getting devotional benefit, but the rest of the time they're just living their mundane life. But Krishna consciousness is more powerful than mundane life. Therefore, generally there's progress. So as long as they're not committing offenses, there'll be progress. It may be slow, but there'll be progress. And then after some years or time, whatever it is, days, weeks, months, years, then they start to see elements that can improve and bring it closer to Krishna. But if they went into it with that knowledge, that Krishna, that quality of my attachment to family, that's Krishna. So therefore, if it's Krishna, therefore I have attachment to Krishna, you know, as attachment in the form of wife. So then, therefore, so Lakshmi is manifesting as the wife in this attachment. So therefore, how would I assist Lakshmi in the form of wife to obtain that attachment? You know, worship Krishna in that form. So how would I take care of the wife? So there's a respect. He's taking care. He may, but he's still a service. You know, the form of children, the form of their car, their house. Because to have all that, you need this environment. So therefore, the house is one manifestation of Lakshmi to serve Krishna in that form of attachment. But now, as that, then that form of attachment is to the house, so then how do you assist that house? You have to take care of it. If you don't maintain it, it falls apart. Therefore, that's not progressive. You understand? So that means this whole Brahman understanding can work very nicely in the household life. And this is why those great devotees can be involved in household life and be nice with their wife and their kids and have more kids and do all these things and make money, and they're not off the Brahman platform. Those on the mundane platform will go, well, this is nonsense. That's because they're nonsense. They can't see Krishna and the workings. These devotees do. Right? Pallad Maharaj is seeing Krishna. And he's worshiping Krishna. And that's coming, therefore, in this environment of his being the king of the demons. And so, therefore, he takes care of the demons. He takes care of his kingdom. He takes care... Otherwise, how could he take care of demons? He's a devotee. You know? So, even that's Brahmastha. The others, they can see. The spirit soul, they're all servants of Krishna. They just don't know it. And because they have these attachments to seeing this way, therefore, you take care of them. So, they go on... They and then hopefully they'll take up Krishna consciousness.
So then you send it to the Brahman platform.
But you can take it further. Yeah. But I'm saying you take Paramatma, you take the Bhagavan. But the point is that attachment's not Krishna as Bhagavan.
Yeah.
That's why you can't say, oh, it's Krishna, so therefore I can sit back and now relax and my Maya is fine because it's Krishna. Like the other day we had the man go, I always thought it was Krishna. I was saying about his cheating and lying. Like that. But but that's not Krishna as Bhagavan. That's Krishna as a quality.
Okay, so
with the quality, what we're looking here, Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the sun ray. It's just a part of the sun. But it has the quality of light and heat. But it's only a very small part. But it's dependent upon the sun. It's not independent. So the quality of Brahman that is here is based on Krishna's quality. It's dependent upon the quality. You connect it to the quality. It's progressive. It moves forward. You don't see it in connection. It's dead, technically. So therefore, you get a dead result. That's why they say, get a life. So what they're actually meaning is, become Krishna conscious. See everything in connection with Krishna. Bring everything to life.
Isn't that what they mean? Quality, you then bring it to Bhagavan.
Yes. It means through that step of Bhagavan. It means going from not seeing... anything connected to Krishna. To seeing connected to Krishna is Brahman, then Paramatma, as he's the person that's doing, then as the ultimate supreme person who is having his pastimes is not even connected with all this nonsense. Right? But much of the time, to get you even to make a distinction, because you're trying to distinguish between matter and spirit. So, because we only see matter, we don't see spirit. So the first thing you do is, within matter, what is good matter and what's bad matter? Right? Like that. So therefore, good matter is pious, bad matter is sinful. But then people think, because I see that, now I've got religion, I've got philosophy, I've got everything. No, that's just the start. It doesn't get dynamic till you hit Brahman. When you understand that good is connected to Brahman. In other words, Lakshmi can manifest as sinful, but that's way down the line. So her first manifestation to Krishna in this is going to be pious. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have a conjugal relationship. The first is going to be, you know, properly married couple, you know, who are properly matched and know their duties and are performing it very nice. That's going to be the first manifestation. Then it's going to go back from there till it gets down to Parakeet, until it just gets out into, you know, one night stands. You know what I'm saying? So it gets farther and farther and farther away. But the principle is still the same. If you don't understand how that's working, you can't deal with it. You cannot progress. Does that make sense? Okay. Do you have a question?
Just in relation to Lakshmi being the environment, serving Krishna, how does that relate to Balaram being the environment, the Dharma, the Paramatma serving Krishna?
Because that'll be the how you say? You always, in everything, is always going to have the male and female aspect of it. So then there's always going to be, because within everything you can, you know, take the masculine and feminine out of it. So you have the element here. So okay, so this is the environment of education. So then you're going to have then, I have to think about that, because we use the column so much. It just immediately comes to mind. I have to think of other examples. Okay, you have the column. So that we're saying is Lakshmi is manifesting, you know, as this environment here to serve education. But now within that column, and you'll have the masculine and feminine element. You have the strength of the column, which is the masculine, and the feminine, which will be the form of it. You understand? So you always are going to have those two. You know, so Balaram's always there, so you have that masculine feminine environment. It's just a matter of which aspect you're looking at more. So then and there, then you're taking, is Balaram, is you're talking about Narayan and then Lakshmi. You know what I'm saying? Because for us, technically if we say Krishna, it means Braja Krishna. All other Vishnu Tattva expansions technically are Balaram. Technically, everything else is Balaram. But at the same time, it's Krishna who's expanded as Balaram. Therefore, we can say it's Krishna who's the Ananta Sage. Krishna is, you know, Karana Dakshai Vishnu. Krishna is, but at the same time, we can say it's Balaram. You know what I'm saying? So, practically, Krishna gets it done as expansion as Balaram and through his energies. But it's still Krishna who's doing it. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the thing. That's why this point that is being made in the Chaturshloki and all throughout, whenever Krishna talks about it, is he'll always make the distinction that I am everything, but at the same time I am different as a person. You know, in other words, the big man, he is his whole empire, and you got picked up from his airport because of him as a person. But it was done through his energies, his secretary talking to the manager, you know, arranging with the driver, you know, who you know, picked up the car and went and then got you at the airport. It's still him doing it, but at the same time, as if something goes wrong, you know, they get stuck in traffic or the guy's late or he bumps into another car, then you can't blame him. It's the driver. You know what I'm saying? Because therefore something goes wrong in your karma. Krishna's involved in taking care of all those little interactions that are there, that whole male-female energy interactions. But ultimately, he's only doing that because that's what you want. He's got another idea. That's why then even you approach and you catch and understand Krishna and whatever it is, these things in, that are important to you, your values, and then the environments in which you want that value expressed. Like you want to, you want authority. So that's the quality of Krishna. But what kind of authority, so what kind of environment is that, you know, authority, you know, you're the Cub Scout, you know, master or something like that, or, you know, you're the yo-yo master, or, you know, whatever it is that you want to be, you know, the world supreme master of, then there's manifestations of that. You know what I'm saying? But that quality is there, and then there's so many, that's why there's one male and so many females, because they all connect back to one quality. You know, so there's one Krishna, and then so many gopis, there's so many queens. Because there's so many manifestations that could be in relation to that quality, depending upon the taste. Does that make sense? So that's why ultimately you still have to get back to Krishna as the person. That's why we use these, but we ultimately have to come back. Okay, end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Thank you.